Welcome to the Abnormally Funny People Show with your hosts, Simon Minty and Steve Best. This podcast is sponsored by Barclays. For more information, please see our website, abnormallyfunnypeople.com. We hope you enjoy the show.
And welcome to the Abnormally Funny People Show number 11. I'm Simon Minty.
Hello, I'm Steve Best.
We're getting ready for Edinburgh.
We are. We've actually got the venue confirmed, the stand in the square, on the square in Edinburgh. Lovely.
Yeah, can you just say the stand in Edinburgh?
We could say anything you want, but it's the stand.
I'm very excited about that. We'll tell you more as we get closer to August, but hope you can come and see us. This month, actually, we don't have a comedian on, though.
That's a good one. What? I'm a comedian, so Mr. Simon Minty, as you remember.
It's always good when we rehearse, isn't it? That's a very good point. I meant we don't have a comedian on who's a guest. Instead, though, we're very excited, very pleased. We've got two very well-respected disability campaigners. Firstly, James Partridge, who is the founder and chief exec of Changing Faces, which is an organisation that supports and represents people who have conditions or injuries which affect their appearance.
Hello.
Hi, James.
We also have Mr. Phil Friend. Until very recently, he was the chair of Disability Rights UK. He's now on the board of the English Federation of Disability Sport. He also runs his own consultancy, advising organisations on how best to employ disabled people and serve them as customers.
Hello there.
And you know what? Both of them have OBEs.
No way.
This means, if you're international and you're listening to us, they both received an award from the Queen, being the most excellent order of the British Empire. Does that mean you two can get into places that we can't?
Yes, I think so, don't you?
Well, my daughter can marry in St Paul's Cathedral crypt, apparently.
That's certainly
crypt.
Yeah, crypt.
Okay.
I think that's an unfortunate term.
It's close.
The OBE, though, is a bit of a misnomer. It's other buggers' efforts.
Oh,
that's really what it stands for. No, I mean, that's how most people take it, I think.
These days. Did you both meet the Queen as well?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Very short, she is.
Nothing wrong with that.
I mean small.
Oh, I see. I thought she was kind
of...
She had a very powerful handshake.
Really?
Is my memory of her, yes.
It's all the dog walking.
It was very powerful.
Riding the horses.
In this month's show, we will talk with Phil and James about their work and their huge amount of experience. I kind of see you, although you're not massively older than me, but I sort of see you as sort of forefathers or people who, well, what's it, respected elders, I think is a better phrase, isn't it?
You're digging yourself there, Simon.
Thanks a lot.
So later on, we're going to speak to Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet. He'll be later talking about technology, the newest things.
And we have a new feature. We have Shannon Murray, who you may remember from show 3. She's now in LA, so we're going to be catching up and see what she's up to. At the very end of the show, we're going to read out your messages to us.
If you'd like to get in touch, you can email us on podcast@abnormallyfunnypeople.com.
So let's kick off with Moment of the Month. Phil, have you got a Moment of the Month?
I've really been thinking about this, and it's extraordinarily difficult to think of something that's
Tell me about it, Phil, sort of funny
or, you know, interesting, whatever. But there was a moment today, which Simon knows about, which really did tickle my fancy, which is that we'd met someone for lunch, he and I, and I pulled up. Simon very kindly had found disabled parking spaces outside
right
where
next
we were
to
going.
St. Paul's
Fantastic.
Cathedral.
Really
where,
well
where
spotted.
Where he's presumably allowed to park.
Yeah.
And me.
And you too.
And right. Simon had parked, and very kindly, he'd left the space behind him so that I could park there because I have a tower lift on my van, so I have to get out of the rear. So anyway, while I was beginning to the process of getting out, I noticed a flunky from the nearby hotel with a top hat and tails and all this, earnestly assisting Simon to get his wheelchair, his scooter out of the boot of his car. And Simon, clearly, I couldn't hear anything, but was clearly trying to explain that this wasn't necessary and he was perfectly all right, etc., etc., etc. Anyway, that tickled me. What happened when we came back was that there was a new flunky. Mm. So the old one had got off duty. The new one was now on duty. And the same process happened again. So whatever training Simon had given the first bloke didn't work because the second bloke hadn't received it. So that was amusing, watching somebody trying to help. And it's happened to me.
Do you tip him?
No, I don't tip him. Although I do remember years ago being in Shanghai, and I was trying to get my scooter in the back of a taxi, and kind people came over and helped me, and then they stood there waiting for money, and I said, I'm not going to pay you for that. And they're like, you've got to. And I'm like, but you volunteered. And there was this really weird conversation. The bit this afternoon, the second time when it was happening, and I knew Phil was sitting in his car beaming, so I sort of half looked up, and he was sort of giggling away. But it's very hard, because these are people being very nice, yeah, and that's his job, but... As you say, the problem was he just doesn't know what to do.
Well, it took you twice as long to do what...
Exactly.
You know, that was the point, really.
I quite like the heavy lifting, but it was faffing around.
But even when I'm with you, I offered to take it out, but you're already putting up your... the crane
hoist.
Thing. Hoist. And you forget that, you know, you're ready to do it yourself.
Yes.
That's the thing, but...
It reminds me of that thing where, you know, a blind person arrives at a building and suddenly they're disabled because everybody assumes... They've forgotten they got there without their help. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
They've arrived. They've done all that bit. So suddenly they're helpless.
Yeah. You know? I'm like, oh, if you weren't here. Thank you, Phil.
Although, yeah,
thanks,
it made my day.
Thanks for your deep research. Wait till the
afternoon
and then spam it out. James, do you have a moment of the month?
Well, yeah, I've got a moment of a month. This is very different, really. We had an enormous gala last week. Gala dinner, 250 people. Rory Bremner came and hosted. Fantastic acts. But we also had... one of our champions, a woman called Karen Miles, agreeing to sing. And she is a classically trained, fabulous singer. But we had really no idea how this would go down. So she came on the stage and hushed. And the music started playing. And her voice just lifted up. It was fantastic. And the applause was brilliant. And then I came on the stage and said, Karen Miles was told, as she was training, that with a face like that, she had no future in the music industry. Music industry, are you listening? And the applause was, you know, deafening, because here is a woman who has a fantastic gift, but has never been able to show it in any professional capacity.
What,
my moment of the month.
That's amazing. Why were you worried to start with? That
well, because actually in a gala dinner, you're expecting funny.
Oh, really?
And okay. Rory and, you know, there are acts and it's all sort of fun. And she came on and she sang this most beautiful aria.
The thing is, music is so powerful. I mean,
like Susan Boyle, isn't it?
But it's impossible. I think, as a comedian, I think it's very, extremely hard to follow a voice. I mean, it's.
She was.
You knew she was a fabulous singer, or you'd not seen her at this level.
But we had no idea how it would, you know, go across this huge.
And talking a little bit about her because of her facial disfigurement, saying, that's it, you're not going to be in the industry. But there's the. Program, I think it's worldwide now, The Voice on the BBC, where they have the auditions that the judges can't see the singer.
Exactly.
And now, the little ways you can get through the first round, but does it, yeah.
She could, of course, participate in something like that, but, you know, her career's moved on and she's doing other things.
Right.
It's just this sense that here is a voice of huge power and beauty being kind of sidelined and... Low expectations, you couldn't make anything off that. It was a powerful moment. For me.
I get that bit, that kind of, as you said, not wasted talent, because I'm sure she's absolutely fine, and she's just still a fantastic show, but you're like, well, yeah, could be doing more.
So much of the experience of facial disfigurement is of low expectations.
And it's someone else telling them.
Correct, and that's what we are challenging all the time. You know, in parents, in people themselves, in their employers, in teachers. So it was a good moment.
I got goosebumps. I wasn't even there.
Yeah. No.
It's a bit cold in the studio, isn't it?
Whenever you hear voices, they're beautiful voices, you know that. That's
perfect. Oh, sorry, that was really loud.
So, Simon, your beautiful voice, what about your moment of the month?
Serious and a funny one. Any order?
Serious first.
This was a lovely moment for me. I had two meetings, and they were both on Horse Ferry Road in London. Unfortunately, they were 4 hours apart. And I was like, oh, man. So, cut the long story short, I found myself at the Royal Festival Hall in between, which is, I don't know, 2 miles away, something like that. And then I thought, oh, I should get back into my car. And as Phil said, I had my fun and games, put my scooter in. But I thought, you know what? I know the route. It's not that far. It was a nice day. So I scooted from the Royal Festival Hall all the way along the South Bank, over Westminster Bridge, around the Houses of Parliament, and then ended up at Horse Ferry Road. this sounds a little bit, try and get a bit emotional. There was such joy of just being out and about and not being in my car, just whizzing along the street. I mean, there was too many people and it's really hard on a little mobility scooter. But the principle of that freedom, and also there's drop curbs everywhere, obviously, so I could go wherever I wanted. I made it to, and I realised it took me 20 minutes to do this journey, which it would have taken me either longer in the car because of putting the scooter in or traffic. And then I just scooted back and I suddenly thought, I want to live bang in the middle of London and just get rid of my car and just scoot everywhere. It's really lovely.
Is London the drop curb thing? Is that everywhere in big cities, do you think, around the world? Not the world, but Europe.
US cities, very good. Yeah. Paris,
Barcelona,
very good.
Yeah. Barcelona is very good.
So it's a bit hit and miss. Yeah. Some other countries, not so much.
But London's great.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The other one was I'd running a course which had disabled people on it, and there was a lovely moment. This is a personal development program, and there was a moment where there was a wheelchair user lady who'd got into the lift, and because we were quite friendly by this point, this was a 2-day course, I said, can I squeeze in there as well? She said, yeah, sure. So I squeezed in as well. So we got to the floor, we were getting out, and we realised the way I'd squeezed her and the way her angle...
Oh, no, not another one.
She couldn't turn her wheels, and so it meant she was really jammed right in that position, and my scooter was jamming as well, and I couldn't get because the doors were closed behind me. So she was doing these various manoeuvres and trying to go back and forth. Eventually, she sort of half got out of the wheelchair, but as she did, her trousers got caught on part of the wheelchair, and they dropped, and she showed me a bottom. And I just went, oh! And she went, ah! And we were fired. We sort of went out of the lift and went, we shouldn't have done that, should we?
You exchanged numbers.
Oh, we did. It was a funny little moment. More than we were expecting. How about you? Steve Best, our token non-disabled person, what did you come up with this month?
Well, a bit like James, mine are kind of musical-related, two of them, really. I was doing a charity show. We were talking about this last month, at the and I actually did a charity show this time, but it was actually for a friend who was running it, so at the Comedy Store. And on the way home, Piccadilly Tube, there was a guy playing fantastic electric guitar, but he had didn't have a full arm on the, the strumming hand. But it was just extraordinary, a really good, great player. And it reminded me of Xander. Do you remember Xander and the Peace Pirates?
Yes.
The guy, he played a guitar with a hook on the same hand. It was just phenomenal. And this guy was great.
What was he using?
The one on the tube, actually, I couldn't quite see. I think he wasn't using anything, just his arm.
Okay.
Yeah, but Xander uses a kind of a hooky thing. I don't know what it's called, really, a technical term for that. But I'll put the link on for Xander, but I can't put the link on for the guy on the tube because I...
And I need to spin it a bit, because that could creep to me into, oh, how inspirational and how amazingly, despite not having an arm, he can still play it. But you're a very serious guitar player.
I am.
And presumably you're thinking your flamenco and your stuff that you play without a very good strumming hand. Is this really difficult to do?
I think with electric, you see, you could use a pick, which it's like, with me, classical guitar-wise or flamenco, you'd use all fingers on it. So it doesn't really come into it that way. I think if he was playing classical guitar, then...
He's electric. With a pick.
He somehow was kind of picking it, yeah.
Yeah, so it sounds pretty easy.
Well, it was rubbish, really.
No, but he was... Well, that was my point. Is he great because he was just playing brilliant music, or was it great because he didn't have part of his arm?
Well, I suppose both. It was great music. He was playing great music. So if someone who had the full arm was playing, I was thinking that was great music as well.
Great.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
That's music. Great. Great music.
But the other one is the music as well is actually Alex, my wife, she put me onto this because she does some language impairments with Down syndrome, people with Down syndrome. And she put me onto this. There's a Finnish, the people who are going into the Finnish Eurovision Song Contest, they all got learning disabilities. And it's a punk band. What's it called? PKN. And hopefully we can have a quick listen to them now. Aina mun pitää siivota. Aina mun pitää tiskata. Aina mun pitää käydä teissä. So that's kind of real punky music, but they've all got... Learn some, and they're
it's not your arias anymore, James. We've moved on.
You can hear the arias, incidentally, on Facebook, on our Facebook page.
Okay, well, we'll link that. We're linking everything. We've got lots of links. Good. But these guys, there was an article about these guys, and someone was saying they've all got have Down syndrome. But Alex studies there's another syndrome called Williams syndrome, mm-hmm. and one of them has definitely got that. That's what Alex is saying. So it's going back to this syndrome, but what?
I'm thinking about the live show, and we had the theory that if you want to get your child diagnosed with a learning disability, take them to the theatre. We did that on the live show in September. And that was all Williams, but sorry. Yeah,
it was very convoluted, that one, when I did that. But I just think they've got a really great attitude and great music, and it'd be interesting that they should get to the finish entry.
This was all over the BBC News. Did you see this, James?
No, I didn't, actually. It passed me by.
Did you see this?
Yeah. There was lots of tweets about it as well.
Okay. I think I probably switched off at Eurovision.
Yes.
That's probably where I did.
But some of the countries do put in some great stuff.
There is an awesome band called Heart and Soul. They're in South London, and they play great music. That's part of this beautiful Octopus Club, and there's just a really cool kind of setup. Yeah. So, and the Fish Police is another one, which in the UK do some good stuff. Again, I don't know why I'm doing it this week. Were they great at their punk music, or do you think that learning disability bit affects your judgment? Is there a bit of a
It depends what kind of music you're into. I'm not really into this kind of real punk stuff, but I really went for it. I'm not too sure. Maybe that there was a bit of both on that one, because you think this is they seem to be playing their instruments really well as well. So there's
full arms.
They're all full arms.
Nice. Last year's Eurovision winner was that lady but she's got a beard as well.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah.
Is that a disability?
That
there's
an interesting question about, is that a disfigurement either?
So, oh, interesting.
Question.
Oh, dear. Stumbled in there.
I haven't got an answer.
Thanks for coming on, James. Yeah. Chief exec of Change of Pace.
So beards and now disfigurements.
But it's an unusual appearance, certainly.
But some of the lyrics made me laugh.
Yeah, so it is your story.
At all, because in Finnish you can't, I don't... You know, I tried to learn a language, but it's start-finish, but it was a bit too quick. But
Very good.
That is
very
one of Steve's proper stage jokes, and I can't believe you fluffed it yourself.
It doesn't matter. No comedians on this show. one of the links, I had a coffee and I took a dump, which is that's not a sensible lyric, but it's made me laugh. And then the other one of the limits, I must eat pig food in the nut house. I keep my mouth shut or they will stab me.
Quite aggressive.
Heavy end stuff.
Like that.
They don't care, those guys. They don't care.
Love it. I really did. Oh, yeah, it's great. Check it out. We'll put a link on.
If it means Eurovision is becoming a bit more diverse and a bit more interesting, then fabulous. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good on them.
Get some out there.
Great. Thank you very much, Steve.
Coming up next, we will speak to James and Phil about their work and where disability sits in the UK today.
Find us on Twitter or Facebook by searching for Abnormally Funny People or using the hashtag AFP Show.
Okay, so we're going to have a chat with Phil and James, and I have to say I do know both of them through an organisation we run together called Dining with a Difference. So it means sort of, despite them both being a little older than me, I did mention that, didn't I? But and such respected people with their OBEs, I still will tease them completely inappropriately, which sort of doesn't... They don't deserve it, that's what I'm saying. James, you did mention in the intro a little bit about the organisation and what you're doing. For those who've not come across you, why did you set it up? What was the original purpose?
Well, Changing Faces, I set it up in 92, really, because I'd been through a really horrendous car fire back in the late teens, and I'd lost my face and I'd lost quite a lot of, you know, other parts of me in the fire, and really trying to get back together again to become a citizen, not a patient, took years. And with something like this, and there are many, many different causes of facial disfigurement, from accident like mine, but from birth, from cancer treatments, from skin conditions, facial paralysis, all sorts of different reasons, loss of eye. What I found was that the medical treatments and so on were brilliant in their own way, but actually they didn't really solve a lot of my internal struggle or my social problems, issues. And I found that people around me were pretty terrified, not sure quite what to make of me. And the whole sort of adjustment to living a full life. Took years, and there was virtually no help.
There's no, with the treatment, any kind of counselling or anything that
well,
was offered?
No, there wasn't in those days. Today, it depends on where you're treated. There are some very, very good psychological services attached to cleft lip and palate clinics, for example, but if you happen to have a skin condition, you're not going to get referred to anybody, or probably if you have a head and neck cancer, or if you're lucky and you're treated for burns in a clinic where they happen to have a psychologist, but it's very hit and miss. What our goals were really was to invent new empowerment, but also, very, very importantly, challenge the culture in which we're living, because you can't do one without the other. And so our campaign is for what we call face equality, like race equality, face equality. It means treating people fairly. Now, and therefore it's slightly fringing on, quote, disability, because we are not arguing, by and large, for adjustments in the form of physical, you know,
alterations.
We're asking for headset change.
Yeah, but I mean, I know because I know you, and the fact that disfigurement was covered under the original definition of disability under what was the then DDA in 95 in the UK. Because and to a certain degree, when I was growing up, you could argue someone who was short, but I could move around. I had a lot of independence.
Yeah.
The difficulty I had wasn't a physical impairment that was preventing me or handicapping me, to use other language. It was how other people treated me that was the real limit.
Exactly.
So if you build people's confidence back up, or they manage it themselves, or whatever they need, then in theory, mind you, they're still going to face some of that, though, aren't they?
Well, that's the problem. And the problem is that the prejudice is endemic and probably unwitting. People don't understand that they're carrying around a series of assumptions and stereotypes that stigmatise me.
Is that because people's first impressions, when someone sees someone, that they have a, as you say, an impression that...
Instant reactions, yeah. And almost without thought, the evidence is that, you know, 9 out of 10 people that meet me will probably consider that I'm not going to have a very successful life. It's unlikely I'm going to have a happy life. It's unlikely I'm going to have a decent job. It's unlikely that I will be good to be with. Because looking like...
the last couple, with some evidence.
I know. But this is why it's worrying to be talking to people like him.
He's pointing at me.
Yeah, I'm pointing. But the point being that those instinctive assumptions, stereotypes, need to be challenged. And it's not helped when the media are persistently attaching... evil and villainy and those unpleasant traits to scarring and to disfigurement. So, you know, we are now in the business of trying to draw attention to those types of lazy shortcuts.
Is anybody in the entertainment industry who are highlighting this or coming out and doing stuff? And
no, it's very hard to find role models. There's a guy called Adam Pearson, who you may have seen starring with Scarlett Johansson.
I know Adam.
You know Adam. He's a great champion and has done some very strange things on Beauty and the Beast and things like that. But, you know, there are people like him who will start to appear more and more in public consciousness and challenge these effectively low expectations or distorted views.
The bit that I've found is, since knowing, and I bring you in as well here, Phil, but since knowing you, James, and this might sound a bit clunky and it's not meant to, but now I spot a lot of people with facial disfigurement, and whether that's footballers or pop stars, there's lots of people with very minor or subtle or and a lot of the time it never gets mentioned.
Yep.
Now, there's a real dilemma here, and perhaps, Phil, you've had in your campaigning, where... You don't want to make that an issue because they're being very successful at what they do, but at the same time, they are being successful at what you want to do, so you want to use them as role models.
And
so you're dragging them into something.
Yeah, we have a campaign website called What Success Looks Like.
Okay.
You know, the famous management team line, you know, if you've got a management training course now, so what does success look like, guys? Come on, tell us. Well, we've taken that, because the looks like is a powerful phrase. And we've got lots of stories on that site, whatsuccesslookslike.org.uk, and we're trying to get those sorts of characters to tell their stories, because we need to change, particularly among parents and young people, you know, the thought that, wait a second, my child can, looking like this, be a successful A, B, C, D, and can have a happy relationship and da, 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 and will become a successful person in their own rights in whatever their field is. Those are still yet to be achieved, I think.
Extending Steve's question, rather than comment, I just imagine there must be... Is there artwork? Is there paintings of people? There's people who are sure of a feature in art. Is that the same?
Yeah, well, and there are famous people, quote. I mean, probably the most well-known in Britain is Simon Weston.
OK.
Yeah, and then there's Katie Piper, the acid survivor.
But this is all very modern. There's not, like, Renaissance paintings or...
Well, actually, most people who wanted to be painted had themselves and their faces transformed. So in smallpox days, if you look at Elizabeth I, you see that her face was entirely white with pake that eliminated any of the pock marks.
Is that so? And then it was called paint shop. Now we have Photoshop. That was the equivalent of
that's
the day.
The same process.
Airbrushing, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And to make yourself... And clearly, you know, the likes of Holbein and all of the painters of the famous painters were at pains to try to make people, you know, look as good as they could. Mm. There is actually we've got a very interesting selection that somebody did. They studied, or they went through the ages, and they could find very few people who were actually portrayed with the full facial disfigurement. Mm. And of course, some of the kings of England. Okay. Had hooked noses and, you know, they were obviously villains because of that. Well, yeah, hold on.
This might be a very naive and maybe trite question, but severe, I mean, you said skin conditions, like some, you know, teenagers.
Psoriasis,
what about something like severe acne? Okay, so
very severe.
So, yeah. So
that's I would call that a disfigurement without any doubt.
Fine. I just wondered, because as teenagers you're kind of developing as well, and hormonal and
everything. Were you, Steve, and were you once disabled?
Is that there
were
we
you,
go.
Were you once disabled? So, we're trying to get you in somehow.
So I think club. I think the key question here is how the person feels themselves.
Absolutely.
And how they feel they're treated by others. Just because of the way they looked. Hmm. Well, the word just there is not just. It's huge. Unfair.
But with something like... Sorry, oh God, yeah. So just very quickly, with something like with acne, I don't know what the proportion is, but it seems like quite a big portion of teenagers do have that.
Oh, yes. And there are treatments. Some of them are really painful. Some of them are very dangerous in mental health terms.
Yeah.
But they can be very effective. But our view is that... Actually, just to offer the treatment without helping people adjust psychologically.
Absolutely.
And socially is an inadequate process.
That's great. Mr. Phil, on to you, Phil. I've known you, as I said, with through Simon Minty for quite a long time, actually.
Unfortunate.
Yeah. I was going to ask, that's the thing, that's my first question to you. Now, you had a business together. Now, Simon and I have a kind of semi-business together. How do I put this? How hard was it to work with Simon Minty?
Oh, it's a nightmare, as you well know.
I want you to say it. So
It was fabulous. I mean, seriously, it was a lot of fun, and it came at a moment, really, where I was finding it really tough to be on my own, and I was with people every day. But I wasn't with anybody that I could share the stress. I was getting to a point where I was looking to merge with somebody or sell or something. And Simon just happened at that point to suggest that he could be that partner.
Do you argue? You argued a lot, though, don't you? You have to argue a lot.
We argued...
just trying to get out of yourself.
I'll tell you when we argued the most and the most viciously was over...
Here we go.
Was over what to do about managing staff.
Oh, okay. Mm.
We rarely argued about the direction the business was going or the ideas we had for developing new products or all that kind of thing. But where we had the most difficulties were trying to resolve serious staff issues. And I think Simon took one view, I took another.
But I remember Simon, because Simon used to come to the kind of stand-up gigs with me and all that stuff, we used to talk about. But you did have some hard staff, I mean, some
absolutely
big problems.
I think the thing that mattered more than anything, I don't know whether some would agree with this, but my view is that the reason we never bust up over it was because I really liked him and I trusted him.
That's our problem, though.
But I thought Simon was wrong about his direction. That didn't mean I didn't like him.
Right, right. Now that's
true. He was very passionate about his view. I was very passionate about mine. I think he understood that too. Mm. And we kind of...
I heard it. But...
We sort of found our way through it, which is that I just walked out and sold the business.
that's where it's going. Yeah.
Just for clarity, you sold your half.
I have the other half. There's correction. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to move on now. So you stepped down as a chair of Disability Rights UK after more than 6 years.
Yeah.
So what would you say were the big changes when you were there?
Hmm. Well, I did 10 years in total, because I did 6 years at Radar, and then we merged with two other organisations, so it became Disability Rights UK, so I did 3 years with them. The biggest changes, where do you start? I mean, there have been serious changes. There have been massive. We were talking at lunchtime today about some of those. I mean, the fact that I went up to Manchester, this is not unlike Simon's story about going around London. I went up to Manchester on the train, which I could do, unassisted, got off the train, got on the metro, went out to media, whatever it was, city, got back. I did all of that without even thinking about it. And 20 years ago, I couldn't have done that.
Because of
the accessibility. Yeah. The whole thing was just accessible. And I think we all think like that now. I think in the cities, I think rural communities have a very different experience. But I think in the cities, we've come to expect that we can. And I'm only obviously talking as a mobility impaired person. I think James's points about facial disfigurement, I bet you the progress has been much slower in some ways there than we've seen with accessibility for people with physical impairments of one sort or another. So that's massive. I think attitudes have shifted. I think employers, where I spend most of my time, many of them now get it. Some don't. Some still think they've got it when they haven't. And, you know.
Is there some frustration? Because I remember Simon saying that there is kind of there's kind of cycles where either the people who get it, they kind of move on and go somewhere else, and then it kind of all starts again.
Yeah.
But there is, but then I suppose there's a very slight shift. It does kind of get better, but in small stages. Kind of.
Yeah, and I think what you're doing is you're relying on someone that you've met who's become passionate about the issue, who then moves to a different place and gets passionate about it there. So the word spreads.
Right, right.
Yeah, I think that's how it...
And generationally, we're doing incremental a little bit. Sorry, yeah. James.
Well, no, I was just wanting to add, Phil, and I'm sure you meant this, but the IT revolution has been phenomenal for disabled people. Mm. I think that has been, over the last 20 years, we've seen colossal change.
Well, the iPhone's only 7 years old.
Yeah,
if you think about the apps.
It's not just iPhone, it's the whole transformation of the way we communicate, the Facebook,
email, laptops, and so on.
And the accessibility of all of that to disabled people, I think that has been transformational.
Well, I think it's been a bit of a two-edged sword. I mean, I agree with much of what you say, but I think we might hear from Robin later on, you know, as a blind person, how good is some of this stuff.
So, still way to go.
But I don't disagree with your fundamental point. I think IT has made huge differences to people. I think the other thing that's, you know, the point was, what have I seen change? I've seen us acquire rights. I've seen us acquire positions in society. You know, James was talking about that earlier. I think the scary news is that going to be sustained? Because I think at the moment what we're seeing is a serious attack on welfare provision for disabled people. And now I'm talking about people who really do not have any choices. They are living on benefits because they have no choice but to. And their lifestyles and their life options are, I believe, getting much more difficult. So someone like me who can swan off to Manchester, jump on a train, etc., don't even think about it. We're now talking about people who can't leave their own homes, who are in a very different place. And I think, in a sense, that's what I was most passionate about with Disability Rights UK, was trying to not forget that group. Mm. It's very easy to think that everybody's doing well, because we are, you know, and actually there's a lot of people who are not doing very well at all.
And the government of the day tries to paint that picture. So
of
that
course,
it's finances as well. That's, yeah.
You know, it's not largely remembered that there were 13 attempts before the 95 Act, governments of all persuasions, to bring rights legislation in, and they all failed. Mm. So this isn't a party political statement. This is governments. We know we're in a recession. We know things are tough. But it really galls me when I watch welfare rights being dealt with, but I'm watching other people earning huge amounts from the city or whatever else. And I know it's a political statement, but it's not fair. That is not right.
The Disability Sport English Federation, you're on that now.
Yes. Well, it's my true home.
Is it?
As an athlete, as a wheelchair athlete.
This could go on for some time.
There was a moment once when Phil and I was running the business, and we didn't fall out over this, although we should have done. I can't remember exactly, but maybe it was about stereotypes or perceptions or how people react to us. And Phil using a wheelchair, and even then, he must have been mid-late 50s or something. And so the difference between you and me, Simon, if someone looks at me, they look and think, athlete.
Gold medalist.
And if they look at you, they think, clown. You what? You...
But it was true.
Wait, clown. I mean... No, it wasn't. It was play. I would wear... So I don't think... Well, I can take...
Hang on. Let's do... What did you play? Did you play
difference,
sport?
The difference between us is that I did play sport and I have got medals, which he refuses to acknowledge.
And I have, unfortunately, not done any clowning, so I've kind of let my people down.
The serious point is that... since the Olympics, Paralympics, and the idea that disabled people should be more active and be more involved and local community and that kind of thing. When I was at Disability Rights UK, we did a lot of work around participation in sport, which is not the same thing as doing it.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of being a scorer at a match, maybe, just taking your children along. Yeah. I have four kids.
If they're bringing children, maybe they could get a clown in or something. Well, so I get back in.
Well,
there,
there's always an opening for you. I'm going to work on
this. See, that's why I'm so pleased you're on the board, Phil.
A serious line here.
I hear you. But very quickly on the Paralympics, I think we've had this kind of conversation before with someone else, but because we did a Paralympic show and there's so much enthusiasm, so much going on. Has that kind of carried on? Do people not still remember? But what's the word I'm looking for? The
legacy
effect. Legacy. There we go. Legacy. Is it still working? Is still people remembering it? Is it still going on? And
well, the evidence from participation says no. Okay. The numbers are dropping. But I think I listened to that show, and one of the things that I remember being talked about on the show, from the legacy point of view, was the attitudinal shift that happened. That, you know, when you saw the swimmers with various impairments coming in the water, and people were no longer fazed by that kind of difference. In some ways, it's a bit like the facial disfigurement point, you know, that people were no longer... It was so commonplace that disabled people... I think Simon said it in the show, that, you know, he's not stared at in quite the same way as he was before. So I think that has shifted. But I think in terms of the legacy of people doing sport and so on, there's concerns that that's not had the impact that maybe it should have done, really.
But do you think that's the same as able-bodied Olympics as well, as in the sense that after the Olympics, everybody's really enthusiastic about it as well? I mean, is there...
It's like everyone plays tennis after Wimbledon, exactly, don't they? I don't know is the honest answer, but I think there is concerns amongst the federation, certainly, and sports bodies, that disabled people seem to be not picking up the kind of batons and whatever in the way that was hoped.
Can they pick up the batons?
Exactly, that was the point. See, if the batons were accessible, they could pick them up.
I bet on your guy in the underground with a guitar, he could pick up a baton. He can pick up a tune.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Is there a link there?
No.
No, not really. Dining with a Difference.
Yeah,
how
now
about
there's
that,
a thing.
Then? So I remember, because you were doing a video thing for your...
Promotional
thing.
It wasn't just a video.
It was a great video.
It was real class.
I didn't say it wasn't real class. I just, you know, that was the medium you were
explain what it was for those who had no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm talking about either. But you were putting together a little promo 3-minute clip or something to show people what Dining with a Difference was really about, and I was taking some pictures, and I took a picture of a cake. You made a cake, and you were talking about what you were doing over making a cake, which was actually a fantastic cake in the end, wasn't it?
Delicious.
It was very good.
Well, James was the only one that tried it. I didn't try.
So, but I remember the time you had some amazing stories that have happened with Dining with a Difference.
Well, I think there have been some fun stories. Yeah, certainly. Dining in a Distance was about trying to promote the idea.
Is about. Was.
Is about.
is about.
God, you just can't get the help. Is about helping senior players mainly see disability in a different way. Keeping it simple, that's what it's about. And so you do it over dinner.
Yeah.
A glass of wine, you do it over some nice food. And I think over the time, James will have certain stories. What I always remember is the story of the guy who came along, he was a sort of shop fitter for one of the big companies, and he sat through the dinner, consumed too much wine, and began to say exactly what everyone was thinking but was too afraid to say. And it got pretty hairy at points, because he was really giving it large on what he thought of disabled people and where they should be and all this kind
obviously
of stuff.
Obviously very negative, I
think. A lot of it was. A lot of it was very clumsy. Some of the language he used was extraordinary. But what really was interesting was that he was kind of articulating stuff that we all know people think but don't say. And so there was some fun and games to be had over that.
There's also,
I think we cut back on the wine after that.
There's a skill and an art, because if you have a one-to-one with someone like that, or if it is a kind of training course or something, but because if someone's had quite a lot to drink, plus you've got other diners there, trying to steer that conversation is quite through choppy waters.
Yeah. What's good is that the three of us, I mean, obviously Simon's involved as well, and what we each of us sits at a different table, and we look after the people on our tables. So you get opportunities to have sort of more private conversations, which works terribly well. I mean, I think the whole format's a really good format. It clearly does show when you get people in the room. I mean, Barclays, you know, the chief executive of Barclays came to one of our dinners. He came in like a rabbit in headlights. He'd never been near this subject, really. He sat with us. He broke bread with us. He talked about the issues with his senior team. And from that moment onwards was a complete convert and did an enormous amount to shift the disability debate. And that was the whole objective.
Sponsoring our podcast.
Thanks for taking
even sponsoring the podcast.
That wasn't
Barclays,
connected. That was,
I
wasn't.
I think,
genuine, yeah.
You know, it would be interesting to do an audit trail to see, you know, where that, how we but got
actually,
you where
that,
you've
that
got.
That is the important point, that actually, if we go back through the history of dining over the last 15 years...
Have we got
years,
time?
No, but thankfully we haven't. But you would find quite a lot of people and organisations who can remember back to the moment that they held a dining.
Right.
Because actually things changed after that.
Yes.
Because our argument is if the leadership get it, then lots of other things happen. But if the leadership are just being given, you know, we ought to do this, rather than really get it,
they're not going to pass.
They're
it
not
down.
Going to do it,
and you're
and
Lynn,
they're not
Kirby,
going to leave a legacy.
What's changed in the last 20 years? One of them is this sort of thing. We wouldn't have been doing this. I know the technology is available now, but you know, Barclays sponsoring podcasts on disability topics that are funny. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, no. Wouldn't have happened. So we've seen a big shift. I think dining's played its part.
Interestingly, Phil and I had lunch with everybody, mentioned that before, and the person there was talking to someone in Vienna, and they had shown a Barclays advert which used Chris McCaws on The Blind Comedian, and the people said, we're not ready for that. We couldn't do the comedy and disability. You have to be really kind of... There's still clearly sensitivity, and it's back to laughing.
Well,
laughing
when we went to France, I mean, we went to do a dinner in Paris, and it was... Great fun, but you could sense that the Paris office of this organisation were, wait a second, you, that's awkward, that's painful. And
I thought Shannon mentioned it too, didn't she, about the difference between screen, on-screen disability and so on. And I think Britain is ahead of a lot of places in that. This sort of thing, I've not come across this anywhere else in the world.
There was a little interesting bit, that Paris dinner, we all travelled at the same time. However, we were all on different carriages of the train because of accessibility needs, so we couldn't all squeeze together at that point. Then when we got to the other end, there was the one wheelchair accessible taxi in Paris. There must be more, but we got it. And so Phil got in, and then I had to do my scooter and pack that in. Then James got in, and we were all crammed in the back of this taxi. And I thought, hang on, we're quite serious, sort of successful business people. And they were jam-packed in that, and then we'd had the whole train journey miles apart from each other.
But that's the clown thing, all so many people in a clown car.
Yeah.
You got it.
Guinness Book of Records.
James and I looked at Phil and went, what an athlete. What an athlete.
Exactly. How did he get in here? No, it was... But there are those moments, and we can think back, there was one where a guy that was sitting on the table suddenly left. He just disappeared. And I was saying, and he came back about half an hour later, and I said, sorry, are you okay? He said, no, I just had to go and call a contract to halt until I made sure that it was disability, you know, fully accessible.
So he's working it on the at the time.
And he said it, 1.5 billion probably, we stopped it. Just stopped it there and then. It was only because one of the pads had not got the disability
the dot on
the 5. Mm. somebody couldn't locate the middle of the pad.
We have what we call lots of penny drop moments on Dining with a Difference. Yeah. That was the £1.5 billion
moment.
Dear, oh dear.
But you can go to those machines and you can go and you can find the little
amazing
number. So it's great. Little legacies.
Fantastic. Lovely. Thank you very much, guys.
Have a question or a comment? You can also text us or leave a voicemail on 07756-190-561.
Hi there, Robin. We have Robin Christopherson from AbilityNet. Lovely to have you back. Just to let you know, we got Phil Friend and James Partridge with us. Phil's a huge fan of technology, by the way. So, Robin, your first bit of news.
Well, the first thing I want to tell you about is a really natty app that's actually in public beta at the moment, and you can get involved if you wish. Basically, it helps people with a hearing impairment in sort of group conversations. So people who have hearing loss are often able to lip read when they're in a one-to-one situation, although some people do find that challenging. And obviously people can sign to each other if the other person is a signer. But what this app does, it's called TransSense, and it you run it on your phone, and the other people in the group run it on their phone as well. And it listens for everybody who speaks, and it detects who's speaking closest to whichever phone it is. Mm-hmm. And all of these conversations, all of the speech is recognized in real time. So there's no long delay as it's processing the information. It's like real time voice recognition. And all of these conversations come up on the screen, on the phone of the person with a hearing impairment in different color bubbles. Each colour relating to one of the people in the group. So the microphone can tell who's speaking, and it can bring that person's speech up in real time on the person's screen.
This sounds, this sounds amazing, Robin. And my bit is, you know, on YouTube they do automatic subtitles and they're pretty ropey. They're generally not the same. I mean, how about quality? Do we know? That's probably why it's in beta, is it?
Partly, although it is using a very sophisticated, real, you know, natural language engine. So it has to be done with internet connectivity at the moment because the processing is being done on servers elsewhere. But, you know, it is very quick. It's pretty much instantaneous.
So moving on, so have you got a second bit of tech there?
So the next thing I want to talk about is straight out of science fiction. These are contact lenses that are kind of binoculars at the same time. Now, a group of US and Swiss scientists at an annual meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, recently in the States, they demonstrated the prototype of these contact lenses. Now, they're not aimed at people with a vision impairment primarily. They're actually for they're defense funded, so that you could imagine that they would be used by soldiers in the field. But they were demonstrated at this society meeting with people with a vision impairment in mind. Basically, what they do is they can magnify your vision up to nearly three times, so 2.8x magnification.
Wow.
And they literally just zoom out so that you can see things much more closely. So you can imagine that for people with a vision impairment, this would be absolutely fantastic. At the moment, that you wear them with a pair of glasses, and the glasses don't do the zooming. That's in these little 1.5-millimeter thick contact lenses. All the glasses are doing is that they're watching your eyelids for a definite, like, conscious blink. Not just the subconscious blinks that we're doing all the time, but for a sort of definite blink. And that uses that as the trigger for zooming in or out, nearly three times magnification.
Very clever.
Straight out of science fiction, and hopefully straight onto our irises in the not-too-distant future.
That's great to hear from you, and we'll put all those links up. We'll get the links from you and put them on the website so everybody can find all these gimmicks. And thanks very much.
Cheers, Robin.
Cheers, Robin.
If you'd like to get in touch, you can email us on podcast@abnormallyfunnypeople.com.
Now we are going to have a lovely conversation with Shannon Murray. Shannon was on one of our earlier shows last September, and you then were just about to finally qualify as a lawyer, And now that you have, you went off to Los Angeles to get into acting. Did you? How's it? How's it all going out there? This is a big old move.
I moved. What are we up to? 5 weeks ago. So it was end of January when I came out here. It was a little bit of a kind of a shock to the system, I guess. I've been planning it for a while, but it's only really once you move somewhere that you realise what you've jumped into. The first few weeks were spent living in a hotel in Santa Monica doing a lot of house hunting, which was surprisingly easy for the wheelchair aspect. The difficult bit was the fact my brother has quite a large dog. And there are a lot of landlords have very funny rules when it comes to dogs out here. So we finally got somewhere. We moved in 3 weeks ago. It's brilliant so far.
Are you there on your own, or is your brother already there, or did you both go out to find fame and fortune?
My brother has lived in San Francisco for the past 13 years. And he fancied a change, so he came down to LA. So we're both down here in LA.
And is he in the acting world as well, or is he doing something else?
He does a mixture of things. He's a mixologist and a model.
A mixologist, is that... What's a mixologist again?
It's a bartender that specialises in making cocktails.
Lovely. I like that.
I can't believe that.
In terms of disability, is there differences between the two countries?
Oh, massive.
Yeah.
Particularly in California, access is much, much better than it is in London. I don't even, in London, there is so much planning that has to be done, the forethought you have to put in and going to certain places to check if they're accessible. Here, it's just standard. It's part of the American with Disabilities Act. The legislation is quite tightly enforced when it comes to access. Pavements are flatter. There are dipped curbs where you want dipped curbs. There are harsh penalties for parking in a disabled bay. It's so much easier to be independent here.
We were just talking about me doing a little whiz along from the Royal Festival Hall to House of Parliament, Horse Ferry Road. Yeah, and I loved it because it was just so great and so easy. But you're saying, yeah, but then you can go into every venue or restaurant or, as well as.
Yeah, pretty much they're going to have a disabled toilet. There's the odd one or two. If it's a particularly old, small building, they might not necessarily have an accessible loo. But on the whole, the logistics is much easier.
Is this a case in the
city? I'm not saying everything's perfect, don't get me wrong. America has its own issues, but... for getting around and for house hunting, for looking for an apartment with wheelchair access, you go into an estate agent, you ask to just see the apartments that have wheelchair access, and they send you apartments that are just, wheelchair accessible. Right. It's not like they're up to medical standard or something, but each apartment block, the car parks will have disabled bays. So I have my own allocated space downstairs. I can get around my apartment. It's totally flat in and out.
So James,
these are kind of things that are impossible to find in London.
James was about to ask you a question, but I'm not sure it can be heard. So
I was going to ask Shannon if it was something that is very apparent and impressive in the cities, whether if you go to the small towns in America, whether it's a different situation.
Based on my own experience, I've got family that are in different towns, and I've stayed with them, whether it's Florida, Texas, Southern California. And I've generally found the access there to be great as well. In New York, it's more hit and miss. But New York is architecturally very different to a lot of these states.
So in terms of you're going over there to presumably developing your acting life, world, work. Isn't that why everyone goes to LA?
It's why a lot of people go. For me, it was I wanted to be somewhere with better weather, with better access. I've taken a year out from work, and I wanted to see what happened if I came out here.
So no, you're not putting yourself under pressure?
No.
That's great.
I'm not naive. The acting gigs for disabled people out here, I don't know, it's questionable as to whether or not America is really paying much heed to disability on screen.
Less so or more so than England?
I think less so. I think England is actually more advanced when it comes to disability on screen. I've spoken to a few people out here, and it's ironic that they love celebrating the fact that Glee has a disabled character. And it's like, yeah, but the actor isn't actually disabled. Can you not see what you're doing? And I haven't seen much disability on screen yet. Obviously, they celebrate a lot of other diversity, which they seem to be doing incredibly well. There's a lot more ethnic diversity on screen, which is brilliant. And they say, like, you know, the big networks are making a move to increasing disability on screen, but I've yet to see evidence of it, and I don't really think that the character in Glee is essentially something to be celebrated as their disability representation.
I'm guessing you haven't got your cable connected yet, because once you get HBO, you've got Breaking Bad, you've got disabled characters, you've got Game of Thrones, disabled characters.
Breaking Bad is great, but it has come to an end.
Yes.
So, you know, you do need something else. And obviously, you know, my hero, Peter Dinklage in Game of Thrones.
My hero.
My hero.
No, he's not. He's my hero.
My hero. Tyrion Lannister is the greatest disabled character of all time. He's sexy. He's funny. He's brash. He's confident. He's cocky. It's just brilliant.
Yeah, he is.
More of that.
All of those characteristics, you could epitomise that in a role. You just need the right role to come through the door.
I thought you were going to say that's me all over. That's what I'm into.
Yeah, no, Simon does think he is the Dinklage.
This is so lovely to speak to you, Shannon. I'm sorry about all the technology stuff. We've had
that's
problems trying
right.
to link up, and thank you for being so patient. Can we have a chat with you next month and see how you're getting on?
Yes, please. I'd like to give you a little insight into my experiences at a disability expo over here, which, well, they call it an ability expo, but it's the US version of NADEX.
We love an expo.
So I've got quite a few stories from that to share with you.
Brilliant. We will look forward to it. Thank you so much. Good to speak to
my
you.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Shannon.
Good luck.
Cheers, Shannon. Bye. Bye.
If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please leave us a review or a rating on Audioboom and iTunes.
Well, we're coming to the end of the show, I'm really sorry to say, but a big thank you to Phil Friend and to James Partridge for being our guests. Before you go, what are you up to now, Phil?
I've just bought a new camera, which is really annoying, Steve.
I love cameras.
And I'm going to learn how to use it. That's one thing. But I suppose my big thing is getting into the English Federation thing and seeing what's going on there and seeing what I can do to help there.
Yeah, we asked you some hard questions, bearing in mind you've only just been co-opted onto
new boy. But anyway. I have been an athlete, as you know, all my life, so it won't take long.
And James, what are you up to?
If only this was a video cast, you could see my face.
One day we'll have that.
I've got a really interesting thing to go to on Thursday, Friday, Saturday of this week. I'm going to a conference laid on about the impact of the real breakthroughs in facial surgery that happened at the First World War. So it's a centenary of those events, and I'm going to speak about the concept of fairness for people with facial injuries. That's going to be a very exciting big conference in Exeter, Exeter University.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Lovely.
That sounds very interesting. I'm very into my war stuff at the moment.
I can give you the links.
That'd be great. We can put them up. Thank you to have both of you. As I said, you're good friends of mine as well. So it's been
pleasure
great
to
have
be
you here.
Find us on Twitter or Facebook by searching for Abnormally Funny People or using the hashtag AFP Show.
Thank you, everybody, who's staying in touch with us. We love hearing from you, whether it's via Twitter, email or phone.
Yes, thank you so much. And last month we had Matt Fraser and Liz Carr, the former hosts from BBC Ouch, and it was so great. Damon Rose, who is the editor of the Ouch podcast, as well as all the other Ouch stuff, dropped us a line. I think it would be great to get him and Emma Tracy on the show at some point.
That'd
be
great. Absolutely.
I think so. Well, if you want to contact us, we've mentioned all the other ways, but you can always go to the website. Everything is there. That's abnormallyfunnypeople.com.
You'll find the transcript of the show there, as well as the photos and other bits and bobs with all the links.
Thank you so much to our producer, Harry.
And thank you all for listening.